I have to admit that I'm not just here shopping for books. I said in hopes that she'd join me. I understand you were in the Black Kettle van the night that Jeannie One Moon went missing. She immediately said,
Oh, thank God. Are you taking on the investigation?
In a way. That poor girl. So you were there that night? With George Three Fingers. He's one of my regular customers, and he invited me to that party up in Billings. It sounded like a good time, so I went. Did you know Jeannie very well? Not at all, but she seemed like a sad girl. Sad? Well, I didn't know her, but that night she seemed sad. Do you remember anything particular about that night? Anything that might have happened? Anything about your fellow passengers? There was one guy who kept hitting on Jeannie.
Which one?
I didn't catch his name. Some guy who works in the mines.
Black Kettle?
No, not the driver. Another guy.
Louis Howard?
Yes, him.
You seem sure.
She nodded. He kept singing that song, Louis, Louis, about 87 times to Jeannie until George threatened to beat the snot out of him.
Louis, Louis, in large doses, can have that effect. I placed the book in my lap.
Did you get a chance to talk with her at all?
She nodded.
Before we got in the van, we were waiting outside, a couple of us, and she wandered up.
You didn't see her at the party?
No. Is that important?
I'm not sure, but no one seems to have actually seen her there. What did you talk about?
Her coat was open, and I told her that it was getting cold and she should zip it up. And she just looked at me and asked, Why?
Lisa took a deep breath and settled in the chair.
I zipped her coat up for her. I mean, she was a teenager, but she seemed so much like a child at that point. She smiled after I did it and gave me a hug, and then she said something strange.
What?
That nothing really mattered. But that was okay, because it would all be gone very soon. I asked her what she meant, and she said that there was a hunger that was eating away at the small things in the world, and that eventually it was going to be gone. But she didn't care.
Did she ever mention an individual by the name of Artie Smallsong?
No, but like I said, we didn't talk that long. Just out of curiosity, did she mention
the Eva Oceomas?
Her response was almost as if I'd struck her. The wandering without.
Saying nothing more, she stood and disappeared, only to return with a grocery bag of books that she sat at my feet.
You're the second person to ask about that.
Was the other one a rancher by the name of Iron Bull?
Lyndon, yes. I was going to tell you about him. Have the two of you spoken?
I nodded, down at his ranch. He seemed to think he saw Jeannie the night she went missing, and possibly since then. Lisa gestured toward the bag of books on the floor.
That's every single reference I can find on the Eva Oceomas, a collective of lost souls that hunger for the living. The outcasts banished from the tribes over the centuries. The murderers, the mad, the deranged who were driven off to die in the wilderness. She reached into the bag to pull out a thin, brown paper-wrapped volume tied with twine and handed it to me.
This is the most detailed description I've come across. It's entirely in Cheyenne, but I've had some friends translate a few passages. They're on the loose sheets inside.
The covers are made of a tan-colored, thin-backed board with a simple typeset print of a lone symbol of a circle with an uneven strike through it and nothing else. She leaned forward.
There's a trademark at the bottom with another location with which I'm not familiar.
It was as she described, once again, the circle with the uneven slash through it, and two words, Fort Pratt. Beneath that were some other markings, IIBS, which I assume stood for the Industrial Indian Boarding School. I looked up at her. And the number 31, possibly the number of books printed? I pulled out the postcard that Jimmy Lane had given me outside the big store in Lame Deer.
Fort Shaw I've heard of up that way, but never Fort Pratt.
Blackfeet and Assiniboine in that area. No Cheyenne, at least not to my knowledge. This also has the number 31 on it.
I flipped open the first page of the book and looked at the familiar yet undecipherable language. The loose page, which was the one printed in a blocked, penciled hand, read, It is a dreadful need from those who are long gone that can never be satisfied, and like all carnivores, it calls the herd, preying on the sad and lonely, those living in its hunting ground on the outskirts of humanity. I flipped a few more pages and then stopped. There was a cardboard rectangle, obviously meant to be a bookmark, a Mallow Cup play money card. Lifting the coin card up into the light, I studied it both sides. Where did you get this?
The book?
Yep. I don't remember buying it or anybody ever giving it to me. She gestured down one of the rows. I've got a native spirituality section in the back, and I remember when I was looking for books for Mr. Iron Bull, I discovered it back there, all wrapped up in the paper and twine. And the bookmark? It was in there, too. Looks old, doesn't it? She leaned forward, looking at the mark on the cover. I thought maybe somebody might have left it here, but it was all the way up on the top shelf, so they would have had to have reached up almost 10 feet in the air to place it there. I stuck the card back into the book, closed it, and stared at the white planks of the hardwood floor. Yep, they would have. This ends Disc 4.